Hi, this is Toru Masamune, Shredder from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you are listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hello, fans of super-powered people. Welcome to Comic Book Central. I'm your host, Joe Stuber, once again celebrating the adaptations of our favorite comic book characters. This is where comic books come to life. It's always a blast hanging out with you folks each and every week here at the Comic Book Central Lair, where this week I'm going to be welcoming a very special guest from one of the biggest blockbusters of the summer. That's right, the film that features those heroes in a half shell, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And hey, where would those superhero turtles be without a supervillain to cause all kinds of mischief and mayhem? Joining me today is the arch-villain of the Ninja Turtles, Shredder, actor Toru Masamune. The summer of 2014 saw its share of comic book films take over at the box office, and while the bulk of those were from Marvel, an independent comic book first published 30 years ago. Well, it made some noise as well. The comic book was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Created by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, this comic told the tale of a teenage team of anthropomorphic turtles using their super special ninja skills to fight evil in its many forms. From an initial print run of just a few thousand copies to worldwide turtle mania, the characters were a hit. More comics, animated series, a movie franchise, and a crazy successful and seemingly never-ending line of toys kept the four fun-loving turtles in front of fanboys and girls for years. And when Nickelodeon Movies decided the movie franchise was ready for a reboot, one of the big questions was, who was going to be cast as the big baddie, Shredder? Well, initial reports had Prison Break's William Fichtner cast in the role, and more than one news report quoted Fichtner as saying that he was Shredder. Now, see, that's where the story gets a little hazy, because not long after that, actor Toru Masamune was cast in the role. Toru is a veteran actor appearing in numerous television series and feature films, including the Christopher Nolan thriller Inception. For Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, once Toru was brought on board, things really started to click, as the movie version of the character started to draw closer to the comic book version of the character, the warrior known as Arokusaki, the deadly leader of the Foot Clan. Well, in a year of spectacular comic book blockbusters, my guest today stars in one of the biggest films at the multiplex. You can catch him on screens menacing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as Shredder. A big Comic Book Central welcome to Toru Masamune. Welcome to the show, Toru.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, well, now your background, you've got a background as a chemical engineering student at MIT. I ask you, just how accurate is the science in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? As a scientist, can you confirm that certain chemical properties can cause ordinary turtles to mutate into humanoid creatures? Can you do that for us?
Well, let's see. It's funny. You know, I come from a family, actually, of chemists. So it was actually kind of fun seeing the opening with them, because they actually, you know, that's what they do. They create drugs and pharmaceuticals. And you can have mutations.
Giant turtles,
you
maybe?
I think here's the deal, is that it all works. You know, I actually support the science in there, but I think it's actually would take millions of years.
We don't have millions of years. We need to get this in the box.
But as we know,
right,
Hollywood, it's okay for a movie, for creative license, to compress the timeline. So I'm actually good with it.
You ran it by your family members. Everything works. So, yeah, you mentioned that. Your father, he was a world-class research professor?
He was a rock star. He was just obsessed. He was the man that discovered the second beat of dying. He was not square. I don't know if he knew that.
I didn't. This did not come up on your bio for some reason.
No. He that was his thing. He loved it. I mean, he uh, he just lived and breathed chemistry research, and would love synthesizing drugs, and you know, it was pretty. That was his thing. That was
okay,
his thing.
So that was your dad. Your sister also a pretty brilliant scientist. She worked under a Nobel Prize winner. Your grandfather was it in Japan? He was a world renowned scientist.
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So how did you become an actor? I mean, did you? You started. You started down a scientific path, correct?
I did.
Okay,
well, happened
here?
It's funny because it's one of those things, you know, like when you're a kid, and I, you know, to this day, I love math and science, and, you know, I'll definitely help kids with, like, you know, their math and physics and stuff like that. I mean, I totally love it, actually.
See, that's where we differed. I was looking at comic books when I was in school.
Yeah. I was into it, you know, without a doubt, but I think I think the main thing, it's funny, when I started to think of a lot of the influences, I always think of like my dad. Like he just loved it. He couldn't wait, like at the dinner table, he couldn't wait for, you know, the movie, the talk to sort of go away from movies and, you know, what different relatives were doing and wait for all of us to leave the table and just talk with his buddies about chemistry. he just loved it. And he used to always say to me, you know, I'm one of those lucky people whose profession also happens to be my hobby.
Oh, wow.
And so he used to always say that, which I thought was really cool. Now, unfortunately, when I was a kid, you know, like making stupid movies was my hobby. So he didn't realize what he was actually telling me.
Didn't you make
one
when you were four? Like, were you 4 or 5 years old or something like that, and you're like interested in making movies or like little films or something?
Well, it wasn't a movie. It was fourth grade.
Okay.
Yeah, fourth grade. That's what it was. I do remember. It's funny. I wrote a play, and I don't remember a whole lot about it. But it was a big hit. I remember because like they did it in class, and the teachers thought it was so cool. They showed it to the school, and I think it's just about me wanting through life. And I think my big line was it. In it was, I throw up my arms. I go, "Oh my God, I'm surrounded by idiots." That's all.
In fourth grade. Wow.
That's the only line I remember from the
but
play.
You got the screenplay sold in school, right? I mean, they picked up the option for the play. They did it.
Absolutely,
they
did it. Yeah, a little breakdown in negotiations when they tried to make him do a movie. But you know,
Hey, that's Hollywood or that's school Hollywood. In Hollywood or wherever it was. Well, yeah, it was. This is in Canada.
Yeah, it was up in Canada. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you've got a pretty cool background though, because you were, let's see, your parents emigrated from Japan and then settled in Madison, Wisconsin. Like, how do they settle in Madison, Wisconsin?
Well, he was basically just, you know, came here for grad school in Berkeley, and then he did his postdoc work, I think, over at Madison.
Okay.
And then that's where my sister and I were born, and then he was just chasing tenure after that.
Okay.
So he went up. I think we made a brief stop in Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon, and then he headed up to University of Alberta in Edmonton, where you know, and up in Canada it's great because they just give you freedom to do whatever you want. So they just let him be a mad scientist, and he kind of made a name for himself up there. So
okay, well, that kind of background then has to be perfect for an actor, because you've just got all these different influences coming from everywhere. So how do you apply that in the roles that you get? I mean, do you just sort of like, because there's not like, okay, I grew up here and this is, I've known this for 30 years. It's like, okay, I'm here. How do you kind of take all that life experience and bring that into your acting profession?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny you say that. And part of me is sort of thinking I may actually make a career of just imitating my relatives. So one thing I found that there is that. But I think there is something to having these kind of weird, very different sort of lives that I think, you know, you develop a skill set that you kind of, I think especially when you're younger, you kind of reinvent yourself, you know, in a sense. And that's just going to do, or at least that was my instinct. So what I found is, you know, at some point, maybe about the time, you know, probably around college, I realized I had all these different sides to me. And I didn't really know, I guess, which one is me. I guess they're all me. But so it is kind of nice, actually. I find that going into different roles is pretty effortless because you're probably right. I never even thought about that. But probably was just kind of moving around because, you know, Edmonton, I mean, I remember the shift from Edmonton to Boston, very different, you know, and then just the whole world and all these different things. So that's one thing I found that probably was helpful in that sense. It's funny, too. I remember seeing other sides of, like, my mom's. I saw this whole other side. I didn't realize she, like, hated The Great Outdoors, and she actually preferred the symphony, you know?
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
I did not, and I guess she's just, like, putting up with, you know, living up in Canada. And then, so I just, you know, I think people change when they move, and, you know, so it was kind of a cool way to grow up. And I think just shifting, I just something I do. I think I kind of, you know, I'm a very when in Rome kind of guy. So, yeah.
It's good to be for an actor, too. You mentioned Canada, you mentioned Boston, you mentioned Pittsburgh. I'm guessing you're a hockey fan?
Oh, yeah.
Can I also assume that maybe your favorite team is the Pittsburgh Penguins? Maybe, please?
Well, you know, I've always been great. I mean, it's funny, too, because, the serious hockey fans, right? Because even Madison, of course, is a perennial NCAA, you know. Favorites and everything like that. So, yeah, Penguins, yeah, you know, it's painful being an Edmonton Oilers fan, so I have this little part of me that's still alive that hopes one day.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm in L.A. now. Who would have guessed I ended up in another hockey town? So,
I had this conversation with Adam Baldwin, I know, and unfortunately my beloved Penguins didn't do as well last year, so...
Yeah, the Penguins are awesome though. I love the Penguins, and you know Crosby, of course. I mean, they're a great team. So I remember kind of a Pirates fan for a bit too. You know,
Your stock just went way way up on this interview.
Yeah.
Huge fan of the black and gold. Hey, speaking of Pittsburgh, your first film role, Pacific Heights, with Pittsburgh's own Michael Keaton.
I actually did not know that.
This is a movie. This is scary Michael Keaton. This is like psychotic Michael Keaton. So they always have like funny Michael Keaton, and we have scary Michael Keaton. This was definitely scary Michael Keaton. What do you remember about working with him? In our world, hey, that's Batman. What do you remember working about with him on the film Pacific Heights?
Well, it's interesting. This is great because this is like my first gig, you know, and I was just playing like the kid neighbor. And I think what happens is, he was the scary neighbor, right, that moved in. And I don't know if you remember the story, but there was the storyline where there's this black guy that was applying for this nice place in Pacific Heights. And he put in his crit app, but because he really wanted to go, and they weren't sure if they should take him. And...
Yeah, they rejected an application, and all of a sudden they let Michael. Of course, because Michael Keaton comes in, he starts flashing wads of cash, and then next thing you know, it's scary Michael Keaton. Yeah.
And so we were the nice Asian family who was living in next door, and I was helping move in, and then I accidentally step on his that guy's credit application, and I notice on the bottom of my foot, and I go, crap, whatever, and I just throw it into the garbage can from there. Yeah. That was like a great plot point.
And that's why the original guy doesn't get to get in the house, and scary Michael Keaton gets in, and chaos ensues.
And I do remember one point I was sitting on the chair, and I was just excited. I mean, geez, my first movie job is just awesome. You know, I'm just going, wow, this is so cool. Yeah. And finally, John Schlesinger, the great John Schlesinger, which was a privilege to work for him, was saying, okay, we need someone, you know, we need to figure out, you know, which of this family is the one that, you know, would step on the application, have it stuck to their foot. And people would look at me and go, now that guy looks like someone would, too, get an application stuck to his foot. And so he called for me, and the AD called and goes, yeah, Tom Rassoni. And the guy, I remember the guy next to me looked at me and goes, wow, you've just been discovered.
So, nice.
So I went in and I did that. And it was really cool. And I, you know, so I was a little maybe intimidated by those guys a little bit, you know, like Matthew Modine and, you know, Melanie Griffith. So it was a little... I don't want to say starstruck, but I just kind of felt like because I didn't know my way around, but I do remember it as a table read. One thing I remember about the table read, he just went for it. You know, in these table reads.
This is Matthew Modine or Michael Keaton?
Michael Keaton.
Yeah, sorry,
Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody kind of usually works their way through the script, right?
Right.
And, you know, and everybody has their style, too. I'm not even saying this is good or bad acting, but man, he was just rocking it during the whole reading. He was just like, he was going all out of the table.
He's 100% in right from the start.
Right from the start, wow. And that's something I remembered.
Wow.
And it was just fun. I remember he was across the way, so it was all magical. The whole thing was just, you know, because that was my first exposure to any of these people.
Did you know he was Batman? Like, did you get like, oh, that's Batman? Or was it like that was like too new, or you weren't into the characters at that point?
Yeah, you know, I think I probably did. I'm going to guess I did. But it's funny, I don't know, but I don't remember that being the you know what I mean? Like, you know how sometimes you think, oh my God, there's so-and-so. I was definitely thinking that's Michael Keaton. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Definitely... I mean, with me, if I had been on set, it'd be, oh, you're Batman. That's all I could see, which probably would have got me fired.
Batman,
it probably would have got me fired like 3 seconds later, which explains why you're in the movie and other people aren't.
That's right. Remember, his name is Michael.
It's Michael.
The key to show business success. Oh, don't call them by their hero, their superhero name.
Don't call him, but yeah, right. Yeah, he's in disguise. Hey,
I did have a girl last night at the bar that gives. She kept calling me Shredder. And goes, you'll mind if I call you Shredder, right? I'm going,
Sure, why not?
Yeah, sure, why not? You're cute.
Hey.
you can call me anything, honey.
It's better than not being called anything at all, right?
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, another cool kind of genre project, or one of these interesting projects that comes up, Warbirds. I was kind of looking at this.
Oh, classic, yes.
Is that, I mean, this is, what do we got here? World War II planes versus pterodactyls?
Well, this is a brilliant movie. It's a Sci-Fi Channel movie, which is, I believe, and I say any actor, if I have advice to young actors out there, do a Sci-Fi Channel movie at least once in your life, because they're pretty awesome.
Sharknado 4 or something.
Sharknado 4. Well, I'm having my people pitching for it right now.
Much success with that.
This movie is really funny because the director is actually highly intelligent writer, and he was almost trying to sneak in stuff in there to try and see if he could sneak it through in there, because Sci-Fi just wants to make it kind of wacky and fun. But it's sort of funny, so there are all these little things where the basic story is there was I think WASP or something. There was like an all female. Fighter squadron, which actually did exist, and they were flying B-52s, and I don't know if they actually were transporting weapons, but the idea in this story is they were transporting this secret cargo, which was the atomic bomb, not to give away any spoilers.
You're just whetting our appetite to go see it.
Yeah, right? They fly it over, and Brian Krause from Charmed was he was the guy that was kind of thrown there, sort of running the secret mission. No one knew what the secret payload was, and they crash on this island. They're taken to Tinian, which actually was, I believe, where they assembled the atomic bomb. This is the closest island, non-Japanese occupied island, I believe, at the time. Which I think, in fact, actually they shipped it. I can't remember the actual thing that happened, but that was the idea, and they were going. That was the secret payload. So they hit an island along the way. This big rainstorm, they crash into the island. They discover, and I'm sort of this Jeff Captain Ozu, and I'm sort of the scary officer that appears to be the threat, but later we find the real threat are the big flock of pterodons that actually...
Yeah, it's Jurassic Park.
It's
World War II meets Jurassic Park.
Yeah, and then so when we realized that, I'm down to three men, and we've been under attack from these pterodons, and then we band together to try and fight the pterodons, and again, spoiler alert, somehow after escaping, the atomic bomb does slip out of the payload as they're trying to escape and kills off all the pterodons. So it actually explains a dinosaur extinction as well. So
there's some like crazy like research done on this. So you do have the like crazy out there visuals of these pterodactyls and the planes, the fighter planes going. But from what you said, there's some crazy research going on too.
Yeah. No, I think that's the thing. Is this guy? Nor is it the place. I mean, it's not the place to really make a serious movie because it's fun and games.
Oh yeah, it's bug nuts crazy. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
But he wanted to throw in things there that I guess he likes talking about. I mean, he loves that stuff, and so it was in there, it's pretty fun. It was pretty fun, and actually, stayed friends with a bunch of folks from there, so it was a real good time. But
a very cool project to have on the resume. Very cool.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And
so.
Another cool project to have on the resume, the one we want to talk about today, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yes.
The latest in the film franchise. We've got a reboot with this one, and it is just blowing up the box office right now. Yep. What, I mean, how can you ever prepare for something like that, for something to just hit that big. I mean, you know, Warbirds is great, but you know, when you've got something that just sweeps the world, I mean, my goodness.
It is. I don't know. I kind of feel like I don't know if my head's, I can quite wrap my head around it. And I see manifestations of it, you know, just in terms of people's reaction.
Right.
And that's all I kind of gather from, okay, this is something that actually everybody knows about and is excited about. And, which is probably a good thing maybe because it's a little mind boggling. But you know, the way I look at it, and this is the reason why I think there's a lot of it is, just because everybody was so great on this movie, it doesn't feel like it was obviously it was a big movie, but because everybody was just so cool and nice on this movie, it didn't feel like a big movie shooting it, other than obviously you see the budget and you're working at these huge, you know, obviously the budget's huge, but somehow the personalities didn't feel that way to me.
Yeah. Well, I think anytime you throw the name Michael Bay into things, there's a perception of like, okay, this is huge.
Yeah. But when I think about, you know, working with Jonathan Liebman, the director, and, everybody on the cast is just so nice and down to earth, you know, that it just never, and to this day, just doesn't feel that way. Like, in other words, I don't have these bigger than life personalities. Even, you know, I can't tell you how like down to earth Megan Fox is. I mean, just, you know, I could have been talking to my neighbor. So there's part of me
because it's such a different perception that we have, because we think, you know, okay, Bay's involved. We got, you know, this, you know, huge, you know, Jonathan Liebman, you mentioned the director. I think he directed the sequel to Clash of the Titans.
Yep.
So you got all these, you know, and the franchise. So I think, and Megan Fox, you throw her into, you know, it's just like, you think it's just this like massive thing, but you're saying it's almost like has sort of like an independent film feel.
Well, you know, I've had that because I think it was such a bear, just like it was such a huge movie, and just having it come together as well as it did was such a relief at the premiere. A lot of times, you know, you're just talking like, I'm talking like the executive producers or, you know, even at the end, Jonathan Lee, sorry, well, I'm going out of town, but, you know, when I get back, you know, let's go grab a beer or something like that. I'll give you a call. And he goes, yeah, sounds good. And then he just kind of walked away. I said, wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
and so there's a lot of that. And even all the top people, I didn't have that, a lot of interaction with Michael Bay, but, you know, all the exec producers, blah, blah. They were just relieved. So the sense was that, I could sense that Michael Bay knew, but, you know, a lot of people weren't sure it would do as well as it did, you know, that weekend. So, you know, everybody's going, oh, geez, you know, because obviously, you know, Galaxy was just, you know, killing it, not just in the box office, but also the critics, you know.
Right.
So everybody's worried. Everybody was worried.
Yeah, anytime you're going up against Marvel, I mean, it's such a juggernaut right now.
Yeah, so it was really fun making those calls that weekend, just calling, you know, and calling up these big executives saying, man, that was awesome, and goes, yeah, I'm really happy. And this, you know, it really is like calling my buddies up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I'd hang up, oh, that's different. That's new in my life. So the reality of it for me is it doesn't feel that way, and maybe that's why I don't quite get a sense of it. And, you know, maybe also, too, because I'm kind of a numbers guy. You know, I'm a scientist, engineer, you know, so I see numbers, and they're kind of numbers to me. Oh, you know, whatever. Oh, 65 million. No, that's, you know, whatever. 6.5, and it's into the 6.
The numbers were okay. Yeah, the numbers were okay on this
one. Yeah, the numbers coming out okay. Yes. The theoretical model, yes, it matches the theoretical model, blah, 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 plus or minus, you know, whatever. Okay, yeah, the analytics work out. Okay, I'm happy. You know,
equals
so I don't really...
sequel. A plus B equals sequel.
A plus equals C. So really, in my mind, going... Okay, that makes sense. That's good. All right,
there's another check coming.
check, exactly. So you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm talking, I was figuring out maybe, you know, heading over to the Japanese premiere. I'm thinking maybe it'll hit me then. I don't know. But it could just be bigger than anything my mind's capable of really processing. So, you know, maybe it's just as well. So.
Yeah. Well, it's an unbelievable continuation of the franchise. Did you get a chance to meet the creators of the comic book, or the creators of the characters, Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman?
No. I really wish I did. I'm hoping to somewhere down the line, you know, maybe, you know, Comic-Con next year or something like that. But because I've always loved those comics. I mean, it's, yeah, all, although I know I guess right now, I guess they got the new those IDW ones. They're in there. They're in there. But all those. I mean, so I'm a big fan. I'm gonna say on some level more than the cartoons and the movies. I just because I think the comic books, some of them are just like, you just read through an issue. I've had a few of those, and it's just like great writing, and it's just, it's like, when you read that last frame, it's like, whoa, that was a crazy issue. So there were a lot of those. So I'm a big fan of those. So that I'm actually looking forward to someday because, and plus, sort of my connection with New England, I always thought of them as funny because I remember always hearing about that, and I was thinking of them as almost a local phenomenon. You know what I mean? Because, oh, yeah, these guys from, like, Eastern Mass, yeah, then came with the same Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, blah, 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 that kind of thing. So it's sort of something that, I've always been aware of them for a long time.
That's what I wanted to ask you. What kind of research you did for the role? Because the character itself, the character of Shredder has kind of gone through so many different changes. You mentioned the comic books. You mentioned the animated series. The comic book's very dark.
Yeah.
Very dark, very violent. Sort of a, I guess it was a parody or something almost on the, Frank Miller's Ronin and Daredevil, like the kind of 80s feel. But then the animated series was more toward the Playmates toy line that was coming out. Yeah. They wanted to sell.
I think it was almost created to, it's almost, I think the toy line almost was the first idea. It's like, oh, how are we going to sell toys?
And right. It's almost like, depending on what you're watching or even the movies, I guess, the movies were trying to hit that sort of sweet spot of, sort of wisecracking, pizza-loving turtles, but then, we need to have the dark, ninja, kung fu and all these different things too. So what kind of research did you do for the role, or did you just go into it completely, I don't want to know anything else?
Well, here is the thing. I mean, as an actor, I've never had a challenge like that where you actually had to live up to, well, not just a pre-existing character, but really an iconic character that, it was tricky. It was a tricky one. So I went through all sorts of incarnations, and I think my nightly ritual for months literally was, it's kind of funny, literally, probably at some point I'd watch an episode of like some of the earlier cartoons and then I'd read at least one issue of a comic book, and then I'd watch like an episode of The New, because I figured it's Nickelodeon, so maybe I didn't know to what extent they'd be kind of taken from that Shredder. So I'd kind of go through this whole process where I just absorb I'd immerse myself in Ninja Turtles for about two or three years.
Oh, wow. So you were just bringing in stuff from everywhere. It was fun
because I didn't know where this was going to go, and I just realized on some level, it was a little bigger than me, if that makes sense, I'm never going to be able to create this character. It's going to just emerge, which it did. And I think also because of the nature of it, there's so many people working on this character. All these films, right? It's not just like one person. I mean, the actor is there, but they're just one piece of the puzzle. And so a lot of it was that. And as it came closer, it was interesting. I remember the first thing I shot, and I was very lucky because it was William Fichtner, and it was just, I think of all the great things that happened, that was one of them. What a privilege to work with them. And that guy just, that was just awesome,
Yeah.
And what I found is I was kind of going in with, and it's tough because these movies, these big movies are really tricky because so much is going on, and you have to just sort of fit in there somewhere. It's not like doing a play, where you're working out, you're sitting with the director, and they're working out the character, and, you have 6 weeks of rehearsal, and you just have to go, and I've actually been a big fan of, recently, just the way I'm working, is sort of David Mamet, invent nothing, deny nothing, that it's kind of all there. And the nice thing is, not only that I had, had all this research, but, this somehow has been, the story's been, somehow been following me around for 30 years, because, it's in there, it's all there somehow, and I just like that way of working, as I'll just allow it to happen. That being said, when I start, I'm doing a little intimidated because it was my first time on set, and I was kind of pushing and trying certain things, and it kind of wasn't working. And I just found that if I just started listening to, Bill just starting, as Eric Sachs, and we were just listening and having the conversation, and it just is interesting. And then the character came to life, which was a much kind of, it was almost a darker, brooding one, and it kind of went there. which is my preference anyway. And then, sure enough, the director said, that's kind of where we want to go. We want Eric Sachs to be the, you know, the outgoing face of it. And okay. Sort of the dark, brooding guy in the back. And it's kind of cool that somehow, without any effort, we're actually going in the same direction, which I think is probably a little more in the comic book direction, my feeling. But which is my preference anyway, and it just kind of went that way. So I feel like this is very much something I just, there were so many forces at play. I thought, you know what, I've done my homework. Let me just let this, you know, let this character emerge. And sure,
just be organic about it.
Yeah, and it, you know, and plus you can trust it too, because you're, you know, it was such a pleasure to work with such great people, not just, you know, Bill, but, you know, Jonathan, just everything. You can just trust everything around you and just, almost like, you know what it came down to? It almost came down to, I went to that place where I'm just a little, you know, a kid, and you're with friends, and goes, all right, you be Shredder. All right, I'll be Shredder. I kind of went to that place. And
just playing superheroes in the backyard.
Totally. So that's, oddly enough, where you just let it, whatever comes out, you know. And
wow.
Yeah, so it was
well,
fun.
Like you
it
said,
fun.
That you've that character's been bouncing around your head for so many years now. Well, and you mentioned the great William Fichtner, too. Okay, well, here's this interesting, and I sort of tied this into something you and I talked about off mic. And we're talking about, like, you know, one take or, you know, 30 takes. And, you know, it's like, where's that sweet spot of finding a role? You mentioned William Fichtner. He plays Eric Sachs in the movie. He does not play Shredder.
Yep.
You play Shredder. But originally, was he cast as Shredder? I think he was originally cast, correct?
Yeah. I believe, you know what I think it was? And again, I was, you know, brought in later in the process. And I think they, this is a bit of a speculation my part. And, I guess at this point I could probably pick their brain, but pardon me, I'm just so pleased that they hired me. I just, you know, I'm not going to go in and say, so what happened? You know,
right. Don't question it. Yeah.
I'm just happy to get the phone calls. I'm not going to, like, you know, I'll just go with it. But this is my belief is they started going down that line. And, you know, when you have Michael Bay money, you can say it's not working. You know, I don't think the storyline's working because I think they're going sort of with an alter ego kind of thing.
Right.
And you know, and all these, you know, big movies are like that. They, you know, they try things, and the nice thing is if it's not working, they can completely shift. They can just reshoot entire sections. They can, you know, do all that. So I think at one point they were just trying, and they said, you know what, I don't think this was working. And I think they also sort of, I'm guessing saw it as a nice opportunity to make Shredder Japanese as well. You know, I said, let's kill two birds with one stone. Let's separate these two characters. Because you sort of see how the villains kind of need to be in two places at once. So it just wasn't making sense. And I really like it. Actually, William was pleased too. It was really fun at the end because, you know, I never asked him what happened. Because I just don't think it's my place. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're not a producer, you're not, you know, you're not a casting agent and things like that. So, yeah, it's kind of tough for an actor to come in and, you know, unless you're Harrison Ford or something, and start throwing your weight around, or Tom Cruise.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where when it happens, it's like, okay, that was what was supposed to happen. So you kind of wonder, like, yeah, when you look at William Fichtner, he's like, he's not Shredder. But when you look at you, it's like, yeah, that makes total sense. So is that one of those things that was sort of found on set as you're going, and it's like, okay, this is starting to work a little better?
Yeah. I mean, it you know, again, I was just going out, showing up on set and doing my job, and, you know, they were doing whatever, and they went home, they'd do it, whatever adjustments. But, yeah, it was definitely an evolving thing, and one thing I thought was really cool about it, and it was kind of refreshing to see, because that's the way I think the creative process should be. You know, it's kind of an evolving thing. It ends up being what it's supposed to be. And it's kind of funny to think when you turn around this kind of money that they don't just have everything figured out from day one, that, you know, that's supposed to be set and blah, 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 you know.
It's a little scary, isn't it?
yeah. But it was kind of cool that it had sort of a looseness of, like, that's why I say maybe sometimes I still feel like it's sort of, yeah, this is a little indie film. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's like, that's got these turtles in it. Yeah, play this, like, goddess guy, you know. I mean, it feels like that because even though the creative process is a little like that, they're saying, oh, it's cool, let's try and do this. And we were working through it, and then sure enough, you know, it was kind of evolved. So I think it was one of those things that And again, as you know, this thing went on for years. So they, I don't know how far the first storyline, you know, and probably went through even more than that. That
yeah, I think there was originally like they were aliens or something like that. Like the turtles were going to be aliens. I mean, had you weren't in on it at that phase.
I wasn't in at that point. Okay. And I don't know if that was ever true. And I don't, again, I probably could find out, but.
Yeah, at this point, who cares? It's they're Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's closer to the comic book. Fans are loving
it. Yeah. That's the way I look at it. Is what they ended up with really works, and I think it's totally. I mean, there are probably some things that. Well, you know what? You can't even say that too, because the story itself has gone through so many incarnations, and you know, even criticisms I've seen, but I said, well, that's not true, you know, because there were, you know, because I realized, no, that's not true, because when it was in the Mirage series, blah blah, you know, whatever, you know. I think it gives a lot of respect to the real fan side. And in fact, all those guys are like total Ninja Turtle fans. That's the thing I never understood about the criticism. Like, no, it's like, how can they not be fans? Like, dude, it's like, they're state devoting 4 years of their lives in a $125 million movie. Are you? So I think they're probably bigger fans than you are.
It helps, you know, when you know the source material and you enjoy it. Speaking of the source material, I got to ask about your character. Is your character Aruku Saki?
Well, you know, here's the funny thing I'm going to say yes, because there's definitely a storyline back there. Now, they didn't write that in, and again, you know, I'm assuming all this stuff will be kind of treated in the sequels.
Okay.
But yeah, there's no question that, you know, it goes back to Japan. So I was working as if that was the case, and that's, you know, that's the way I was working, but it was not, you know, as you know, not mentioned in there. But of course, you know, these things can all be dealt with in the sequel. So I'm going to say yes, but that's coming from me. The writers, producers may have a different idea entirely by the sequel. I don't know. But
you've not had a specific discussion with them. Like, you didn't go up to them and say, hey, am I Aruku Saki?
No. Well, here's the funny thing, too, is I found that, you know, because it was, which I think this role came to me at the right time in life, because I really know how to work my way around these sets. And I understand that you have, if you're asking a question, it better damn well be critical to what's been about to happen. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I almost knew, like, there, like, I had to come on set ready with my thing, but if I'm coming on as Aruku Saki, whether I am or not, if they have some other ideas, if it's there and I see it in the script, then of course I'm going to ask them about that. Oh, I see I'm not Aruku, I'm this other person, what's going on, you know, whatever. But I'm going on with that, and if that's not something that's, if I can just do that on my own, does that make sense? I don't need to ask them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because, it does.
Yeah, because that's the thing I really found on this is that, yeah, just every second, you can't waste a second of anybody's time.
No, so and that may not be the thing that needs to be revealed yet. If you've got a three movie arc, that may be something that they want to reveal down the line, and that may taint your performance as you're going in.
Yeah, and I might find that, you know, I was off, but I don't think so. I don't see anything there that suggests, and no, you know, everybody was fine with my performance. I think it was fine, but yeah, but that's where I was working from.
And you got the scars, and we're going to find out how we got those scars, I'm sure, at some point.
All that stuff will come out, and so there's, it's kind of an interesting thing in that I think there are a lot of, you know, cool things that sort of can come out in the sequel, you know, because it's kind of, you know, I guess it's like any sort of initial, you know, part of a trilogy is a lot of it's just introductions, you know, introductions of people, you know.
Yeah, we're setting the stage. It's definitely setting the stage in this one. How does your Shredder differ from other versions?
I'm going to say, I feel like, well, here's the thing. Somebody's always embarrassing, Dr. Where you come from. There's always part of me that, and I don't know if it plays even, but I believe that, you know, I think they did a bang-up job of just making Shredder into this incredibly cruel character. I mean, I just was really pleased because I found myself not like him. You know? So that was actually pretty cool the way they did it. You know, I mean, they really did a great job of that. And but I always thought it's a lot more interesting if it's kind of coming from a more very painful place. because I think that's, you know, real cruelty, like really deep cruelty comes from that. I guess, you know, of course you can be sadistic or whatever. And so that was the part and actually if you look at some of the comic books, investigate that. I think, especially if you go to like the later IDWs, they really investigate some of that intense pain that has gone over eternity, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For Raku or Shur, however you want to look at it. So that was the part I really wanted to kind of bring home, which I think, you know, within what I was given, I think some of that is there. But you got to do that without, it's not like, oh, you know, because obviously Shredder's the villain, so you can't be like, you know, oh, I just, oh, poor Shredder, you know, you can't have that. So there's a sensitive side of Shredder, you know.
We need to know where it came from, but we still have to hate him.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the part I kind of feel like from what I've seen, and I'm going to say, because I think that a lot of comic books actually address this as well, but certainly in terms of on screen, I kind of wanted to have a little more of that, where it's coming from and sort of the, you know, kind of Shredder's feelings were hurt. So, and that's where that all comes from. I kind of feel, and this is just the way it turns out, maybe it's because this is the way I am, a little more introspective, I think, than he has been in the past. There was actually a funny moment, actually, I was in the comic book store somewhere just doing some more research, and I remember, I the connection with the Daredevil, you know, how it's sort of a spin-off of that, I think it was, there's a connection there, so I thought, okay, well, why not, you know, read some Daredevil, blah, 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 and I remember I asked the guy at the comic book place, and he goes, yeah, so what do you have in Daredevil? He goes, you know, new stuff or old stuff? I goes, oh, I said old stuff would be good.
Like Frank Miller era 80s?
Yeah. And he goes, yeah, exactly. He goes, oh, man, I guess it'll blow your socks off. And goes, great, and he takes me over there. And he's totally into it. So I'm going, okay, and he's kind of going, and there's this, blah, 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 and he goes, yeah, but, you know, this is more the, this is much better because this is like the swashbuckling Daredevil, not like the moody thing, you know, that, you know, you're used to. Because, yeah, you can only take so many rainstorms. You know? So I was kind of thinking about that. And I thought about, I kind of made my shirt a bit too moody, didn't I? You know, because I had that. That's the way it turned out. I'm going, oh, man, I hope I'm not like, you know. And then I thought about it. I said, you know what? Screw it, man. That's I'm Shredder.
You are Shredder.
Yes, I'm the new Shredder. Shredder's moody, damn it. Come on.
You get to make the call now.
I know, because, yeah, it was like that moody Shredder. Jeez, so thank
God. This is part of that whole actor thing, embracing it. It's like, you know, am I ready for this? Am I not ready? You know, now you're embracing it.
Yeah. So, and the thing is, I don't feel badly because that's actually organically what came up. So I guess if there's a difference, there is a little more of that. But, you know, I think it's great because that can very easily translate into sort of the real cruel. I mean, it's actually, I believe they're part of the same thing. I sort of decided that as an actor is that they're real. Because I get cast as a lot of these sort of mean bosses and blah, blah. But I started realizing that's, you know, I was wondering, because the two type of roles I'm good at are very sensitive roles and really mean bosses. And I thought, well, you know what? They're really just the same thing, you know? And so I tried to do that with Shredder, which hopefully with some degree of success. It was interesting. So, yeah.
It's definitely a multi-layered character that you're bringing to it. So now, looking at the film, how much are we seeing of you in costume, doing the fights, doing the physical acting, and how much is CG?
Well, here's the thing that, I mean, which is interesting about it, and this is maybe part of why I can't really quite wrap my head around the whole thing, is I just consider myself part of a team that created this character. Because the stuff in the armor was a stuntman. I can't fight that well. I mean, I'm okay. I do like sword stuff. I mean, but the stuff I can't do, I'm not that good. I wish I was, and plus I'm big on these days, since you can kind of split these things up, especially for this kind of character, which is, you know, a bigger than life character. I think every aspect of Shredder should be done by the absolute expert, you know? Mm-hmm. So the CG, that was all. So I was doing all that stuff from the ADR booth and the voice booth. So all that was just voicing.
Get to be in the costume at all?
In the armor? No. I was always, that was just me, you know, all the ones where I'm in, you know, walking around in the kimono and
okay.
In the dojos. That's me. Yeah, the armor is all is. That was entirely from the voice booth.
Maybe the sequel.
Well,
yeah, or maybe for your next costume party.
Yeah, exactly. I'll have to. I just think it just takes. I mean, that's pretty tricky stuff. I almost feel like I personally am not. I'm someone that if they said, "Do you want a stunt person do it?" I usually say yes. I remember early on in my career, there was like a very simple move. It was just a small indie film, and they had stunt people, and the guy director asked me, "Do you want to do your own stunts on it?" And I tried it because I'm being like, you know, this young cocky actor. Oh yeah, I do all my own stunts. And it was embarrassing how simple it was. I just had to jump up and land on this mattress behind a couch, and I was supposed to shoot while I'm doing it. And the simplest thing in the world. And I tried it once or twice. Looked terrible on film. I think it looked like me. Well, it basically looked like me doing it. And so, and I said, you know what? Let the stunt person do it. And it was so badass. And so since then, I thought, you know what? That's, you know, it's movies. You know, it's movies. And
there's a guy getting paid for it.
And they're just really great people. It makes you look better. And it's just better experience for the audience. Because, I mean, no one wants to see me doing something I'm not that good at. You know, I mean, so. So I'll just stick to what I can do, you know, which is, you know, the voicing, the acting, and
make him menacing. Just make him menacing.
Yeah, you know, that's what I did. That was my job. But you know, a lot of the visuals, you know, it was a whole team. It was a whole team of people creating this character, which that's why when I say they did a great job, I just don't think I could play Shredder on stage. I could do the Broadway version.
The Turtles on Ice?
Turtles on Ice, yeah. I think they're going to have to get someone else. I don't think I can do it.
Well, you get the hockey stick going, though. Maybe you can do a little hockey action with it.
That's true. Yeah, if they have a hockey element, then I'm there.
New aspect of Shredder. I'll take the word Shredder to a whole new meaning. Hey, you know, I never know how to ask actors this question and get a solid answer out of it. Because you always ask, you know, well, if they talk to you about a sequel, and then it's always like, well, I can't talk about it. Well, we never say anything. So I'll ask you this. Did you ask the director or the producers about a sequel? You're shooting, you're sitting there in the trailer. Hey, well, 2016, what do we – I mean, that has to come up on some level.
Like during the premiere. So, well, what's going on?
Tap him on the shoulder.
So Michael, so what's the deal?
Am I coming back?
Now, you know, there are two things going on there. One, as I was saying, sort of an extension of that thing, is that I've kind of learned that the most value can be on something this big is to, and I found this too, that sometimes if you just stick to what, like if you're really efficient with your conversation, like I remember, you know, when I was working on Inception, I remember meeting Leo I was thinking, trying to be chatty with him, and I thought, you know what? Really, what's cool about this? He's not gonna invite me to his Christmas party. I know that. That's never gonna happen. But I know that the cool part is I'm working with him today, so everything was like, okay, whatever. And it's all, and that to me is the fun interaction. I think even this is an extension of that. If I'm talking about stuff, I want to talk about what is happening at that moment. Does that make sense? And I think number one, I think it's sort of an awkward thing because I don't know, they may have someone else in mind. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. And to me, if it ended right here, man, I'm still the happiest actor in Hollywood. I mean, I couldn't ask for more. I mean, it's crazy, right? You know, so there's part of me, I haven't approached that because I don't want to turn into wanting to be in the sequel because this is just awesome getting this far. And, you know, because even that, I don't know. I mean, it's Hollywood, right? You don't know.
Well, it didn't end. I mean, he's still, I mean, there's life.
Oh, no. But what I'm saying is that the fact that it was nice, there's is actually relief to realize, oh, yeah, they are using me because I thought, oh, maybe I'll go to the premiere and, oh, why is
Well, it's not like the first comic book. It's like Shredder doesn't make it through the first comic book. I mean, he does afterward, but
right, but that's true. That's
in
true.
The movie,
yeah.
It's a movie. He's still kicking.
Oh yeah, because he did the little mutagen. Yeah, absolutely. He's still around. So right. So that's all good. But I guess what I'm saying is that I don't have a three picture deal, so I don't know. And I was just brought on. It was awesome. I didn't even have to audition for it. They just offered to me. So this is just all, you know, a blessing to me.
You didn't sign your life away like Megan Fox did.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Exactly, man. Megan, that was so dumb. No, right, I mean, yeah. I was like, man, what were you thinking?
No problems. No problems with Megan Fox on the set, though, right?
No, she's off. No, it's
okay.
I was surprised
to see her in another Michael Bay film, to be honest. So
yeah, I was wondering what was going on there. But, you know, I mean, you make sense, though. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I go through stuff with my friends all the time, you know, and we have falling outs, and we get back together just as good as before. So
Megan Fox is good people?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was funny because I was there. Here's the interesting part is the stuff I was doing, you know, because all that stuff was CGI, right, that I was doing with her, right? Because when she kicks me, you know, all that stuff CGI. So I only know her through there. So the first time I met her was actually at the premiere.
Wow.
And I was there with a friend of mine that, you know, she's a journalist. And, you know, she's very great. You know, she's good because she makes sure that I'm talking to the right people. You know, she knows the way I am. I just kind of do my thing. And so she's kind of going, so, oh, there's Megan. And, like, and she can spot important people from, like, 10 miles away. It's really amazing. Says, there's Megan talking. She goes, yes, introduce yourself. I'm going, oh, okay. I'm kind of going up to her. I'm right behind her, and I kind of, you know, she has a little tattoo on her shoulder. I'm saying, okay, she's kind of talking, you know, obviously surrounded by people. I'm thinking to myself, you know, yeah, you know what? I'm Shredder.
we keep coming back to that, don't we?
I can tap Megan Fox on the shoulder. Say, hey. Okay. So I tap, and then she turned around, and all I can say is that was like the most normal. I mean, I don't, she's still, and it is real down to earth. I don't think it's a fake thing. Like I think, I feel like I can tell the difference. Literally, I could have been talking to my neighbor, and real, you know, really foot deep plant on the ground. So you know, you hear various things, but she's definitely good folk to me. So it's
very cool. Very cool. Yeah, and you're in a movie with her. You're co-starring with her. So yeah, why not? Why not go up and tap her on the shoulder?
Right. Yeah. Hey.
I'm Shredder.
You may know me. I'm Shredder from Teenage Mutant.
You may have seen me somewhere menacing you on screen.
Menacing. I'm the menacing. Yeah. So it's good. But yeah, in answer to your question, as far as the if I get the phone call, you know, I was afterwards when I was, you know, when we hit that $65 million. Over the weekend, I called up one of the exec producers, and we were just like so happy, blah, blah. So it was a real nice conversation. And then he ended it, well, I hope I'll have something to talk to you about in a little bit. You know, we knew what
so
he was talking
you did
about.
Say so. Okay, I knew there was a little bit of conversation.
No, well,
in there
he didn't. He did. I didn't offer that. I just said to congrats. I called to say congrats, and we were just talking, but he ended it.
But that's
it
only
that.
Natural. I think anybody would do that and just say, like, hey, what's next? I'm excited. Yeah. Let's do this.
I didn't ask. He offered at the end. He goes, well, you know, like, as we were saying goodbye. He goes, great. Well, you know, he's just saying how, you know.
He's telling you, we'll talk.
Yeah. Like, we were just sitting around talking, and we were talking about how great and what an amazing, you know, and it was nice because it was really harrowing. As any of these movies are to make, and he was just saying one thing I liked. He was just saying, you know, it's great. I'm really glad it all worked out. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. You know, because they didn't know me personally, so they're taking a chance. But you know, in personality wise, I think I was the right person for it because you know that thing I was telling you about. I know what it takes to get, you know, what needs to get done and how not to get in the way, blah blah, and how to step up when I need to, all that sort of stuff. So he was really happy with all that and goes, yeah, you know, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, and it just really worked out. I'm really glad, blah, 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 blah. And then so when he was saying, when we were saying our goodbye, saying, all right, well, thanks, you know, that's when he mentioned, because, well, hopefully I'll have something to talk to you about, you know, in a few weeks. But, you know, we'll take it.
I'm guessing you're going to be booking a call time here pretty soon for the sequels.
Well, we'll see.
Shredder. You make a great Shredder.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It actually means a lot to hear that. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, let's talk about what you are working on. Let's talk about what is in the can, what's going to be in the can, what's going to be on the screen. What are your latest projects that you've got going on right now?
Well, right now it's interesting. I have a few indie projects. It's funny. I'm in many ways I'm kind of an indie guy at heart. You know, I like these little indie art projects in between my $100 million movies.
Pencil those in. Well, that's why they always do these movies, so I can do my independent art films.
Exactly. So I do have a movie that's I called Sway that's showing at the Toronto Independent Film Festival. I have some small part, and I play a pastor in it. But the movie itself is a beautiful movie. It's sort of these three parallel romances. It's like Thailand and London, I believe, is the other one, and then in Los Angeles. I'm just pastor in Los Angeles, and I'm not the center of the story, but I'm the pastor of the family who, lost someone. It's very intense, very film festival-y. So it's a wonderful film. That's called Sway in Toronto Film Festival. And then there's another kind of, which I've never done before, is actually what would you call that? The paranormal thriller. I've never done one of those, which I love. I love those. So I don't, and it's called Shatter. It's opening up. I think it's still in post. But I play an NSA guy, and it's funny because, which is kind of nice, because I realize these days I don't seem to be getting offers, which is nice, finally, after all these, decades of working, people actually offering me stuff, so that's nice.
Right.
But, and I'm thinking, usually the nice thing about it is you kind of know, you feel like it's good casting, because, it's usually someone that knows you, and I'm thinking, okay, and this guy asked for a friend of a friend, can you play this character? I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe he's... Oh yes, then I am sure it'll be something that's I'm really right for. And then, sure enough, I get the script. I just agreed to it because it sounded good. I get the script and said, "You are, a socially awkward office or something." Yeah, office drone. I said, "Oh, okay." So that's what he thinks.
Wow, what a wild swing from Shredder.
Shredder, yeah. So what it was?
The guy on The Office.
Yeah, the guy in the office, and I'm one of these sort of guy. I guess my job is I'm this NSA guy. That my job is I look at Skype conversations. As the NSA person, I just make notes, and most of them are really boring. I think that's the thing. I've become a boring life, and then I see all this weird paranormal activity, and then no one believes me, that kind of thing. So that's kind of what that story is. So that should be fun. I don't know when that's coming out, but that'll probably be that sort of, film festival thing. And then I actually had produced a short with a friend of mine that actually I guest starred with, this girl, Amy Ryder. She was on Secret Life of an American Teenager. It was a big hit on ABC Family a couple years ago. And it's fun because I have this, when I was growing up, I mean, a lot of it, like my first love in certain ways was just comedy. This is really wacky comedy. And so this is this. And, it's funny because we met guest starring together on the show Big Shots with Bill McDermott. And I think I played her manager and she played some Japanese pop star. But we stayed in touch and we're working together now as kind of a producer. And then she's more writer-director. And just really wacky stuff. So there's a really wacky short that we made. There's kind of a feature version, but we have a fun short version. We're putting out to festivals now. It's called Monogamy Experiment. And I'm this very crazy marriage counselor. It's pretty fun, and it's fun because we have and she had a lot of her friends. We brought on a lot of her friends, and so Brian Krause's pops in there, and then and she has a bunch of people from Secret Life, one of which was Shailene Woodley. So she's in the movie, so that's kind of wacky. Wow. And it's pretty awesome cast for a little short, and it's just. Sort of a really wacky thing. So we're just kind of putting that out in the festival circuit now, and hopefully we'll get some traction with that, and that kind of thing. I'm kind of doing that whole song and dance. So,
well, let's get some attention on this. How can fans find out more? Website, Facebook, Twitter? What do you got going on?
Well, my Twitter is at ThoroumAsamune, basically my full name, the spaces. And the short is, why don't we leave it at that? Because then I can make announcements, as we get into festivals and stuff like that.
Follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, on Twitter, yeah. So that's my Twitter and Instagram is at ThoroumAsamune, the full name, no spaces. And I will definitely let everybody know, as these things come up.
And as soon as that conversation comes up in a few weeks where you have booked the sequel, you can find out about it on your Twitter feed.
Yeah, no, he'll probably call me back and say, yeah, I meant to say, can I, whatever, can I have that, whatever thing I lent you, whatever.
I'm sure you'll be fine. I'm sure you'll be fine. Yeah, it's a memorable shredder, and like I said, it's blown up the box office. So cool. Hey, that always means more, and continued success. We hope we get to see you menacing our favorite turtles again in the sequel. Toru Masamune, thank you so much for joining me on Comic Book Central today.
Great. Well, thanks for having me.
Well, that's the thing. When you've got Michael Bay money, if something ain't working, fix it. And it worked. To date, the Turtles have raked in more than $350 million and are set for a Blu-ray and DVD release December 16th. My thanks to Toru for hanging out in the lair and talking about the Turtles with me. Hey, if you want to find out the latest about his projects and maybe even a TMNT sequel, check him out on Twitter at Toru Masamune, TORU MASAMUNE. Check him out on Twitter. And hey, while you're there, if you haven't already, be sure to follow Comic Book Central on Twitter at Comic Book CTRL. And give Comic Book Central a like on Facebook at facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network. I recently posted a handy dandy episode guide on Facebook to help you track down some of the great conversations you might have missed. Also, you can subscribe to the show in iTunes. If you're there, be so kind as to rate and review the show on iTunes if you're liking what you're hearing. Hope you are. And hey, don't forget, November 8th is the one-year anniversary of Comic Book Central. And I'm going to be celebrating with a special Comic Book Central anniversary episode on Friday, November 7th. It's just a few short weeks away. I'm going to be playing some of my favorite moments over the past year, but I want to know, what are your favorite moments from Comic Book Central over the past year? Feel free to use that episode guide to jog your memory. Go back and check out some of the other episodes. Write into the show at joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click the Signal Me tab on the website, or you can tell me on Facebook or Twitter. Let me know what those favorite moments are. And if you'd like, you can even record an MP3. Would love to hear from you that way. Tell me what you think of the show, what your favorite moments were. I'll be sure to play that on the one-year anniversary episode as well. Again, that's coming up November 7th. So, hey, I want to hear from you, Comic Book Central Nation. Now's your chance to be heard. In fact, you know what? We're going to do something special here at the Lair. For the one-year anniversary, I'm going to have the first Comic Book Central giveaway. That's right. So if you can send me an email or let me know what you think of the show, send me a message, MP3, what your favorite moments were, I'm going to gather all these together. We'll take all the names. I'll draw one name at random and give a little something special away. Something very super, let's say. I'll tell you a little bit more about that next week on the show, but suffice it to say, I've got something pretty cool here in the lair. So let's do that. Let's have our first Comic Book Central giveaway. Get those messages in to me. Let me know what you think. I'll put everybody together, pull one name at random, and you're going to get that very super gift. Well, folks, that's it for today. I'm going to pop back into my shell for a few days, but rest assured, I will be back, because next week on Comic Book Central, she's portrayed a Kryptonian superhero, a DC Comics supervillain, and a Terminator. She's the latest crew member from the spaceship Serenity to join me here in the lair. I'm going to be chatting with the lovely and talented Summer Glau. Until then, have a great week. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders. If I go that long, we'll have a four-part Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. We'll have a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle month.
And tune in next week for part two.
And again with Tora. He's still here. He won't go.
And then on take three.
Exactly. Exactly.
I hear you snoring in the background. Oh my God, the shooter won't shut up.
He won't stop. I can get rid of it.